Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel and a special program this morning featuring the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, speaking with Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, Governor. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Great pleasure, as always. Alan, go to it.
Okay. Hi, Gov. Thanks for coming back. Always appreciated.
My pleasure, Doctor. Good to hear your voice.
Don't start that stuff. Okay, here we go. My first question is, I wanted to know, you know, a year ago you were opposed to marijuana because of the possibility that it would lead to other things and bad things, and now you've changed your mind. What's going on?
You leave out a couple of interim steps there, Doctor, between the diagnosis and the surgery. I said I had doubts, for sure, and I think many New Yorkers had question marks. I put together a task force headed by the Department of Health with law enforcement and all the stakeholders. They did a very exhaustive study, and they came back and said that the benefits outweigh the risk. Also, times have changed. We have Massachusetts that has now legalized it. So if you're on the eastern part of the state, you can go to Massachusetts. And we have New Jersey that is legalizing it. So if you're in the downstate area, you go across a bridge or tunnel and you're in New Jersey. So we are surrounded by legal marijuana, recreational use for adults. So the task force came back, said the benefits outweigh the risk, especially given the new circumstances. We then went to a second group to craft a piece of legislation because it has to be done right. There are a lot of questions. There are a lot of pitfalls. And that group is working through a piece of legislation. But I defer to the experts and the task force and the reality of the world, Doctor, which is it's here. It's not whether or not you have access to legal marijuana. It's whether or not you have access to it in this state versus Massachusetts and New Jersey.
Can we assume that every time you call me doctor, it's because you're displeased with me?
No. I like it. I like it. It's a title of respect, which you deserve. You have forgotten more about state government than most people know. You bring the advantage of history. That's why I like doctor. You know, we have a lot of very smart young people, but we have very short memories now in the discussion of state government. So that's why one of the reasons I enjoy talking to you, besides, you're just a funny fellow.
So anyway, Trump just tweeted again. He says, the Trump Foundation done great work and give away lots of money, both mine and others, to great charities over the years, with me taking no fees, rent, salaries, etc. Now, as usual, I'm getting slammed by Cuomo and the Dems in a long-running civil lawsuit started by sleazebag AG Eric Schneiderman, who has since resigned over horrific women abuse. He should talk. When I wanted to close the foundation so as not to be in conflict with politics, shady Eric was head of New Yorkers for Clinton and refused to even look at the corrupt Clinton Foundation. In any event, it goes on, and the new AG, who is now being replaced by yet another AG who openly campaigned on a Get Trump agenda, does little but rant, rave, and politic against me. Will never be treated fairly by these people, a double-dose standard of, quote, justice. Comment.
That's a long tweet.
It's a big tweet.
I don't know where you begin on that one. As usual, there's a little factual issue. The attorney general, as you know, is separate from the governor in New York. So I had absolutely nothing to do with the attorney general's disposition of this case. Period. End of sentence. So he's just wrong. You then have to say that Barbara Underwood was a politically motivated person. She's the current AG. She's the acting AG.
And terrific, isn't she?
Yeah, I hired her when I was attorney general. She's just a career professional. I don't even know what her political affiliation is. So that's just Trump being Trump. You know, at one point, I think we make a mistake even allowing him to consume so much media oxygen with his daily rants. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not a tactic of his just to get the media talking about his tweets and banter of the day rather than the reality of the day. So I'm not going to fall into that trap. And that's part of what I did through the campaign. That's what I'm going to do in the government. He poses a serious threat to this country and to this state. He has attacked our state economically with his tax reform plan that's going to see New Yorkers see an increase in their tax bill this April. He's attacking the civil rights of New Yorkers. He's attacking women. He's attacking the LGBTQ community. He's attacking our environment. He's attacking our labor movement. And I am focused on thwarting his attack wherever I can, whether it's the immigrants on the border and taking babies from their mothers. We're going to pass state laws that stop him from doing what he wants to do. I don't believe he'll have the political guts to override states because many of the states are Republican governors. And if there's anything left to Republican conservative orthodoxy, it was states' rights. So I'm trying to put in place a legal system in this state that protects our citizens from his policies and his regulations.
So while we're on, So while we're on the subject, to talk to me or talk to us, I should say, about you know, the judge and overturning the healthcare system, the Obamacare system in the United States.
You know, Alan, they are very clear. They say, "I am about to punch you in the nose," and then they punch you in the nose. You know. Don't be surprised when you get punched in the nose. They are going to overturn Roe v. Wade. Just listen to them. They told you they want to overturn Obamacare because they say, in essence, health care is a luxury. If you can pay for it, you get it. And if you can't pay for it, you don't get it. We say it's a human right. So they're going to do what they said they are going to do.
So what are we going to do?
I laid out an agenda that thwarts them to the best we can within the jurisdiction of the state on every turn. On health care, I want to legalize and institutionalize our health exchange, which has been a phenomenal success and brought health care to millions of New Yorkers. I want to pass a law that says pre-existing conditions have to be covered. Prescription drugs have to be covered. So, yes, we know where he's going. And the agenda I laid out yesterday, my 20-point agenda, is the counter-Trump, counter-extreme conservative agenda. They won't do anything on guns. We want to pass the red flag law. They're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. We want to institutionalize Roe v. Wade. They want to end Obamacare. We want to enshrine affordable health care. That is what our agenda is all about. You know, I'm entering a first year as governor. I have the same title. It's a totally different job than I faced ever before.
Okay, but specifically, Governor, on health care, what are we going to do here?
Institutionalize, pass a law that says insurance companies must cover pre-existing conditions. Pass a law that says our health exchange will exist no matter what they do on the federal level, and it must be respected by insurance companies if they want to do business in this state. Prescription drug coverage has to be covered by insurance companies that want to do business in this state. When it comes to insurance, we have a lot of power as a state because insurance is regulated by the state as opposed to the federal government. So, yes, we know where they're going, and we are countering it.
Okay. Last week when we spoke, you know, as a former New York City guy many, many years ago, and very interested in the decline of the subways, you said you were going down to inspect the L train, which a lot of people are crying the blues about, you know. And did you find anything? What did your inspection show?
The L train is sort of a metaphor for the whole situation. You know, my point with the MTA is when everybody's in charge, nobody's in charge. Governor appoints the chairman, yes, but I only have 6 votes on a 17-vote board. The capital plan, which is everything, is approved by the board, but it can be vetoed unilaterally by the assembly leader. It can be vetoed by the Senate leader. The subway plan can be vetoed by the mayor unilaterally. You have the MTA police, but you have the NYPD somewhere else. So it's a constant situation of everyone's in charge, no one's in charge. Second Avenue Subway, if you remember, was a big project that was going nowhere, but everybody was in charge, but it was always late. I said at one point, I will take personal responsibility for this. If I'm allowed to manage it. And I did. L train is one of those major situations where everybody's in charge. City of New York has been working very hard to come up with alternative transportation plans. The MTA has been working in concert with the city. MTA bus has been working. And someone came up to me during the campaign, Alan. I was in Brooklyn. And a gentleman came up to me and he said, you know, this L train is a some blank, blank, blank disaster. Mm-hmm. And I said, I know, but everybody's doing everything they can. And he sort of grabbed my lapel a little bit and he said, have you gone through the plan? And I said, well, no, not me, but all the MTA has in there. And he said... I want you to go through the plan and tell me that there's nothing else that can be done. And that just resonated with me, you know. I would have been that gentleman. I want accountability. I want to know that you went through it and you say there's nothing else that can be done.
So?
And that's what I want to do. I have the best experts ever assembled. Dean of Cornell Engineering, Dean of Columbia Engineering, they have whole teams put together, the best consultants. We went through the tunnel. We're going to look at the Gateway Tunnel with the same group to study that tunnel and the plans for that tunnel, see if there's anything we can learn there. That's the Cross Hudson Tunnel. Yep. And we're going to have an answer in 2 or 3 weeks. If they say nothing else can be done and this is the shortest we can do it, great. Great. Then I can go find that gentleman and say, I did what I said I was going to do. I'm accountable. I went through the plan. I believe it. I asked all the questions. I believe it.
But why aren't
they come up with a suggestion?
But aren't you really, really saying, Governor, that you should be in charge of the whole thing and forget about all those people who are interfering, those nasty other people, the assembly speaker, the Senate leader, and the rest of them? Is that what I took away from your earlier account of nobody's in charge?
No, I believe when my team comes into me on a daily basis and they say, we are setting up X, I say, who is in charge? And when they say, we are in charge, I said, there's no such concept as we are in charge. Who is in charge? There has to be a person, Alan.
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
There just has to be a person.
Well, you think that person should be you.
No, look, the MTA, the MTA is... a really difficult, difficult situation.
You bet.
It has been starved for decades. You have a 100-year-old system. You have 50-year-old cars, 50-year-old cables. It's a mess, and everybody knows it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have a lot of other things to do, but someone has to be accountable. Period. There has to be one person.
Well, is that supposed to be you?
I don't care I frankly would let this cup pass from my lips. I just want to know that because I have many things to do, but the MTA was set up the way it was set up because no politician wanted responsibility. You know, it's a lot of these authorities are set up so there's no one to blame. The county's on it, the city's on it, the state's on it, the private sector's on it.
And they borrow money, and they're not accountable to the people the same way your agencies.
That is exactly right. What I bristle at the MTA is the ed boards that say, well, the governor's in charge because he appoints the chairman. That is just baloney.
Yeah, but it sounds to me, and I have other things I have to ask you about. I don't have much time. You don't give me enough time here. It sounds to me like you want to be in charge of the whole thing.
Alan, I don't. I have a lot of things that I'm working on. My main job now at this time in history is I'm fighting the federal government.
Yes, it's true.
7 days a week, 24 hours a day. We have an opportunity to pass legislation now with the Democratic Senate and the Democratic Assembly. If we don't blow it, we can have an historic legislative session.
You can. No question.
I really believe that.
So
I can get done everything I have not been able to do thus far because the Republican Senate wouldn't stop it.
Yeah, but some people say that, you know, you were a little too comfortable with the Republican Senate. You kept them in power.
Some people say the world is flat. You know, I have a Republican Senate. Well, you should have just demonized them and just told them to go to heck every day and play politics.
Well, what about all those Democrats who were on the other side of the group of errant Democrats, the traitors who went over and supported the Republicans? A lot of people think that you, sir, were the reason that they felt comfortable. And until you blew the whistle on them and said, get over where you belong, it wasn't going to happen. Is that wrong?
Well, let's stay with that. That defies history as you know it, because as you know it, we have the advantage of history. The tensions in the Democratic conference started way before me with basically the suburban Democrats saying they couldn't do a lot of things that the Democratic conference wanted to do. And the dysfunction of the Democratic Conference started before I was ever governor. I sat there watching it as attorney general, and we talked about it while I was attorney general. So that had nothing to do with me. Also, if I didn't work with the Republican Senate, we would have passed nothing. It would have been gridlock. It would have been Washington. There would have been no marriage equality. There would have been no $15 minimum wage. There would have been no paid family leave. There would have been no free middle-class college tuition. We're the progressive capital, and I did it with a Republican Senate. My point is now, when we actually have a Democratic Senate, imagine what we can do. I believe that we can pass the most intelligent progressive agenda the state, the nation has seen.
Okay, fair That's enough. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but again, I want to
cutting you off all the time.
I want to reiterate that you don't give me enough time. You're very parsimonious with your time. So I have to ask you about Speaker Hastie, who yesterday said that you were being untruthful about Hastie, Flanagan, and Cuomo agreeing to ban outside income for lawmakers as part of a pay raise. He says you three agreed the pay commission wouldn't curtail stipends and outside income. Is Hastie wrong about this issue?
Look, everybody should just read the law. Read the law. The law is very clear. What we agreed to is called the law. It's in the budget. We passed it. Legislators read it. And it was done a year ago. Read law. That's what we agreed to. Now, I think what Flanagan is saying, especially, and maybe the speaker is saying, or he's just falling into the situation, I think they're trying to, they would rather not have the raise and not have the ban of outside income.
I agree with
and
you.
And lose the Lulu.
I agree with you.
I think that's exactly what they're doing. And I think their comments are going to be entered into evidence in the lawsuit that has already been started as Prime Exhibit 1, 2, and 3. And because you listen to what they're saying, I think Flanagan has made a calculated judgment. His members like the outside income. They like having the law firms. If they had to choose between being a legislator and being in the law firm, they'd probably leave the legislature. So he'd rather see them lose the raise and keep the outside income. And they're playing right into the hands of that lawsuit.
I agree with you about that. And I don't always agree with you, but I agree with you about that. So
You never agree with me. Out of every 10 times.
That's about right. What preparations are New York making in case of a federal government shutdown? And you only have 4.5 minutes to tell us about that, or any part of that. If you want to do it in a minute, that'd even be better.
Everything we can.
That's
9 seconds. Set a new record.
That's right. You think there is going to be a government shutdown?
who knows with this cast of characters? I've gone through federal government shutdowns. Frankly, I went through the situation when I was in the federal government. We'll make preparations, but with this federal government is not doing a whole lot for the state of New York, Alan. So we will get by despite
okay.
the shutdown.
Okay, here's a rather long question. On the issue of education spending, you said in your preview of 2019 priorities that the foundation aid formula for needy schools is a ghost of the past that had been started and stopped by former Governor Spitzer. Spitzer responded in Politico that Andrew Cuomo has an Orwellian relationship with fact. Who is right?
Well, again, there are facts, right? Read the law on the pay commission. Look at the budget on the Spitzer. I don't want to call it an administration because it wasn't. The short period of time that Spitzer was in the Capitol before he disgraced the office and the people of the state of New York, he passed and funded a program called Foundation Aid. The next year, it was not funded, and there was a budget cut because the economy had turned. So he funded Foundation Aid for 1 year. It was a program he started. The point on Foundation Aid is you have a governor who passes a program. That governor's gone. The programs do not last in eternity. They are a signature of the governor. And what I'm trying to say on the education discussion is people want to argue foundation aid from Spitzer's first year or the CFE lawsuit, which was resolved by George Pataki. Forget that. Let's argue the here and now. We just have a report that for the first time ever, Alan, says, let's look at the distribution of money to all 6,000 schools in the state. And how much do the rich schools get? And how much do the poor schools get? And what are the districts doing with the funding?
Half a minute.
You have those facts. Look at the facts. The facts say the poor schools are not getting disproportionately more money. And that's the conversation we should have. And that's what the CFE people were talking about 20 years ago. Look at the facts. They now actually have the facts. And that should be the discussion going forward this session.
Well, I must say, Governor, I hate to say it because I don't like to give you an even break. But I have fun talking to you. It's always fun. You got to accept.
Well, yes. You have fun hitting a piñata at a birthday.
You got a sense of humor. So, so it's great to have you, and we thank you so much for everything that for appearing with us, and we hope that you'll keep coming back. That's great.
I will. It's going to be a very important and exciting year, and there's great potential, Alan. So the dialogue is important because people need to know facts rather than just political rumors.
Governor, thank you very much. Have a beautiful holiday.
Thanks, you too.